Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome back to Wellfar, the running podcast with me, Amy Lane. Each week I'm on a mission to share the tools, tips and inspiring running stories to help you move through the world one run at a time. Today I've got an interview for you that I actually recorded back in 2020. I had the intention of sharing this with you shortly after I got Shane Benzi, author of The Lost Art of Running, on the phone. But as the world went into flux, and my life also, I wasn't able to bring you this show. So I'm so happy to finally be sharing it with you today, especially if you're one of the many runners feeling a little lost right now. Perhaps you're craving a race or a challenge, but you're nervous about training for an event that might be cancelled. Or perhaps after a year of just pounding the same route, both your body and mind are feeling a bit sore. Well, this show is for you. 10 years ago, Shane was a runner in need of guidance and an injury prevention plan. Today, he's a coach who's travelled the world researching how movement affects the potential of runners. He's worked with GB athletes, non-runners, blind runners, and amputees. He believes that our movement is as unique as our fingerprint, and in the Western world, we have largely forgotten how to move. Much like many areas of health and wellness that are returning to their natural roots, Shane is spearheading a return to the natural art of running. Here's what he has to say about the lost art of running. Shane, are you there? Welcome to Wellfar.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very well.
So Shane, you've worked in extreme environments, studying and helping runners all over the world. You've been to the African Highlands, the Amazon, the Himalayas, the Arctic. It's documented all in your new book. What kickstarted this journey?
Well, so for myself as a runner, so I was an ultra runner and still am an ultra runner, which means I kind of an ultra is anything longer than a marathon. So I do kind of 100 milers and long distances. And I kind of had two problems, which I think a lot of runners kind of have. And that was that I was constantly getting injured and also not really getting any faster, not really getting any quicker. And so I kind of went on this journey really for myself at first to try and find a better way for me to move. And then that journey ended up taking me quite literally around the world to many different environments, trying to study how people move and what's a better way to run, I guess.
Do you remember the moment that started all of that? Did you read something somewhere about a certain tribe of runners or group of runners and you were like, why aren't they getting injured and I am?
So basically, I went out to America to become a running coach because on my journey of finding a better way to run, I kind of really, really got engrossed in it and found it absolutely fascinating. And so I went out to America to become a running coach because I decided that's what I really wanted to do. I came back and started to coach, but really there were some kind of really big gaps in my knowledge. And I'd always heard about the East Africans as being amazing runners. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to down tools and I'm going to go out and I'm going to study their movement. I'm going to go and live with them in the training camps and understand how they move. And that really kind of kickstarted the whole journey, I guess.
So you're basically an all or nothing guy because most people go to a physio.
Well, listen, I went to see many physios, I could assure you, and chiropractors and all sorts of people. But, you know, they were fixing me, but I was just then going back out and breaking myself again. So I had to kind of do something that kind of sort of changed that cycle of events, I suppose.
I think in the 2020 world, we're all a bit guilty of that. We always try and treat the symptoms rather than the problem, don't we? We just want quick fixes, no matter what it is.
Absolutely. That's the society we live in. I guess what we don't want to do is to take a few months to change the way we move and invest in our movement. Yeah. Do we just want to have a half an hour of somebody doing something for us that will fix us? You're absolutely right.
And so let's talk about those runners that you met. Why could these runners many miles away improve the technique of UK runners? Because obviously they must have been doing something so different to what we're doing here in the UK to not be getting injured and to be running much faster.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what I soon realized is that they hadn't discovered something new. They just kind of never forgot how. I think for us in the modern day world, we live a very different life. And so therefore we move very differently. So what I quickly realized in my research, because really I'm a researcher as much as I am a coach, what I very quickly realized was that if we move the way a human is designed to move, that by default makes us a good athlete. And so that was really, I guess, the catalyst into my research, and the start of it was understanding that actually, if you move the way a human is designed to move, you load the body correctly, and you will also get better performance from that body.
Interesting. So what does moving like a human is designed to move actually mean?
So that's a good question. So I think if you look at how humans have evolved, around about 6 million years ago, we would have been very strong, and we would have been what we would call quadrupeds. So we would have been moving around on all fours, a little bit like a chimpanzee. So if you think about a chimpanzee, and as we evolved, we actually kind of moved away from that very muscular, very strong quadruped approach. And we developed a very, very clever foot, and we started to stand up tall to create an elastic body, if you like. And that made us far more efficient. So this very clever foot and this elastic tall body that we created allowed us to cover much wider areas, catch more food, get bigger brains. And we've kind of developed from there. But what's absolutely fascinating is that now, when we try and do something dynamic, we actually really think about using our muscles to create that dynamic movement. But we actually gave them away 6 million years ago. This amazing elastic system and this very clever foot that we have, we kind of largely ignore. So it's really dialing back into that, understanding what was our amazing USP as a human as we developed, and tapping back into that to help us to run.
So is that because runners often now focus on different parts of the body as opposed to really thinking about their feet?
I think as we grow up, our movement is explained to us generally by something called biomechanics. And so our understanding of biomechanics, I think, tends to take us down the road of thinking of the skeleton as being the kind of main structure of the body, and that the body is a structure and everything kind of hangs off of the skeleton. It protects our vital organs. And when we move, this kind of skeleton acts as a series of levers powered by the muscles, you know, because that's kind of how our movement is explained to us. Whereas actually, I see the body as just one continuous thing. And so you can't just move your leg and it not affect the rest of your body. Really, the toes on your right foot are connected to the fingers on your left hand. Everything is connected to everything. And we do have a very clever foot within that kind of network. But it's really thinking about moving, using the body as a whole, rather than as being feeling slightly more mechanical about our movements.
And how, as runners, do we start to do that? So you must have landed in these amazing situations and seen that people were moving differently. And then how did you start to take on board what you'd spotted, what other people were doing in these amazing places where they were running more naturally, and then put that into your own running?
I remember the very, very first time I kind of downed tools and went out to Africa. I went out to Ethiopia. And I'd heard of a very good coach out there who was doing amazing things with young runners. And he brought through the ranks people like Tirunesh Dibaba and Bekele, who are, you know, world record holders. And he was taking them from very young people and coaching them. And I traveled out to the Rift Valley, and I remember getting there really late at night. It was like a 2-day journey really to get out there. I got up very early in the morning and I went down to the running track, which is essentially a dirt running track really. And it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was high altitude, so it was very cold, and it was a foggy morning. And I just got down to the running track, and there was one person on the track. It was a lady running around the track on her own, just training. And I just remember seeing her and thinking, wow, what is that? I don't know what that is, but it's amazing. She just looked very synergistic and fluid and connected and elastic almost in her movement. It was unbelievable. I hadn't seen really anything like it up close. And I ended up staying there a month and just sort of doing lots of video analysis and really trying to understand what it was. Of course, the runners and the coaches couldn't really tell me because they, you know, they didn't really think of it in a science way. So I came back from that journey and really put my researcher's hat on, if you like. What I identified as the thing that was creating this elegant kind of elastic fluid movement is our fascial system, our elastic system. So my work really has been about better understanding that to try and learn how to kind of tap into it. Because I think if you're going to move in a way where you want to accentuate something, you kind of have to first understand what it is.
Because I've heard that you are this expert in fascia. Should we just start by talking about what exactly is fascia? I know you've mentioned it's all to do with the elastic system, but I know there's going to be plenty of women and listeners right now going, what on earth is that?
Absolutely. Listen, we don't need to get too technical about it to get excited about it. So your fascial system is essentially the kind of elastic system that creates the sea of tension that your body sits in. So remember I was saying about we kind of think of the skeleton as this the main structure of the body.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in reality, your skeleton is made up of give or take 206 bones. Okay. Now, if you just close your eyes and just imagine your skeleton floating in the air, and if you zoomed in on your skeleton, you would actually see that no bone touches another bone in your skeleton. It's 206 bones essentially floating, and they're floating in a sea of tension created by your elastic system. So that's tendons and ligaments, and then something called myofascia. So basically your skeleton is just floating around in a sea of elasticity. Every single bone in your body sits in its own little elastic trampoline of elasticity. So we're not this heavy, clunky structure. So fascia is essentially a connective elastic tissue that runs all the way through your body. It coats your muscles. It creates this sea of tension that your skeleton floats in. So it's an amazing system, but you know, we don't really know that we have it. But because our skeleton floats in this sea of elasticity, if we start to stand tall and get height in our body, we start to then load that elastic system. And that starts to make a big, big difference as to how we move.
I'm envisioning it a bit like Spider-Man's web.
Yes. Well, you know, it has a very web-like structure too. That it absolutely does. And I actually use a child's toy, a 10-segrity model, which is a small child's toy, which is essentially a number of wooden dowels that are connected to each other by pieces of elastic. And it kind of creates its own sea of tension, if you like. It's an amazing system. And, you know, we really don't learn about it. And I think what's so exciting about it, what gets me really excited and what should get your listeners really excited about it, is that this elastic system in your body has a life cycle of around about 7 months. So it's never more than 7 months old. It's always re-architecting and rejuvenating itself. So, you know, sometimes I think when we're looking to do something new and we think, oh, well, I didn't do it when I was younger. I don't have the muscle memory and I just can't do that. Actually, in 7 months' time, the system that is holding you upright and creates this amazing elastic sea of tension that your skeleton floats in will have completely re-architected itself.
That's fascinating.
Oh, it's too good. And you know, if in 7 months' time you would have a brand new elastic system, but if you don't change your movement patterns, the elastic system will be new, but will just do the same job. But actually, if you start to change your movement patterns, it will adapt to help you to do what you want to do. So I kind of think of it as Darwinian fitness. So we think a lot about cardiovascular fitness, our engine and being fit. But actually, what I call Darwinian fitness is the body's ability to adapt to the task that you want it to do. And that's kind of what training is. But I think we're all, or many of us, are running around just trying to build up our engine rather than thinking about the way that we move. If we move what I would call beautifully, we pretty quickly adapt a body that's very good at moving beautifully.
And so how do we all move a bit more beautifully? Because I think for a lot of runners that are listening in, especially everyday runners, I think we are maybe less concerned with what we look like and more concerned a lot of the time with how far or how fast we go. But what you're saying is we can go further and we can get faster potentially if we move more beautifully. So how do we move more beautifully?
Wow. Okay. I think you're absolutely right. We all, you know, there are lots of apps these days and we have lots of ways of being able to understand how far we're running and how fast we're going. And I think, you know, that can be very motivating. But I think rather than running 10 miles badly, we're better off running 5 miles with good form because we're going to increase our fitness and we're going to increase our body's ability to kind of carry out that task, and that you're a lot less likely to get injured than when you're doing that. So it's really, I think for the big thing when we run, and a lot of your listeners, I think, will kind of, especially if they video themselves. And
that's, oh, God.
It can be both enlightening and scary.
Yeah.
You know, none of us kind of run, I guess, with bad form on purpose, do we? We all assume that we're doing pretty well. Otherwise, we wouldn't move in that way. But, you know, everybody has all of these devices that have apps on them that mean you can track your speed and distance. They all allow you to video as well. And what I would really try and get your listeners to do, inspire them to do, is kind of buddying up with somebody and videoing each other and kind of looking at that together will be extremely enlightening. Okay. And then once you can see yourself move, you can then start to understand how you can make some changes. Start to load that elastic system to create that beautiful sea of tension that your kind of skeleton is floating in. So that means getting height into the body. So running with essentially a lengthened spine and really getting that head up with your eye line up on the horizon. I think a lot of us are guilty, and I know I certainly was, of running kind of bending from the waist in a slightly slouch position with the head forward. Do you know the human head weighs give or take 12 pounds, okay, or 5 kilos if we're going metric. That's when it's on top of the body with kind of good equilibrium. That's what it weighs, 12 pounds. For every inch forward your head comes, it weighs another 10 pounds. So if you're running around with your eyes just fixed on the pavement or the grass in front of you, 3 inches down, your head has quadrupled in weight.
Gosh, that must add such a toll to your body because...
Absolutely. I mean, if you imagine if you were going to go out for a park run or just go out for a fun run or a 10K and somebody came up behind you and put a backpack on you with 42 pounds in it, you'd have something to say. It's like doing the run with a small child or a large dog on your back. So just by getting the head up and the eye line on the horizon is going to take a load of weight off the body. You're a lot less likely to then stoop forward, because the moment we start to bend forward from the waist, we lose this elastic system in our body. And you know, this elastic system that helps to propel us, it wants no oxygen. It doesn't want any calories. It doesn't produce lactic acid. It's kind of a free energy source to a large degree, where if we don't have good posture and we have to use our muscles more to propel ourselves, they want oxygen, calories, produce lactic acid. You know, they're very greedy, our muscles, because we gave them away 6 million years ago. So we're not really designed to move that much just using our muscles.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Looking up and looking into the distance is such a good cue. Have you got any other posture tips for like could we work down the body? Is there any other things that runners should be looking out for to make sure that we are running in such a way where we can chase down Kipchoge?
Well, good luck with that. But actually, he taps into these things amazingly well. So, well, actually, let's think about then. Let's start from the body moving up. So if we do it in sequence, that might be easier for you, for your listeners to remember. So one of the big things I think about runners is that we're actually scared of the ground. Yeah, we have a pretty adversarial relationship with the ground, because we blame the ground for impact and we blame impact for our injuries. And so I think, you know, certainly with a lot of runners, and I mean, I do work with world record holders, but I also work with complete beginners as well. So I work with all runners of all abilities. And I think when I first start working with runners, you know, they almost trying to move over the ground and not touch it, you know, to try and run as lightly over the ground as you possibly can, because there's this kind of urban myth that that will reduce the impact and will mean that you don't get injured. But actually, in an attempt to not create too much impact, what we do is we kind of suck ourselves down to the ground almost, so that we don't think we're going to be too bouncy and make and create too much impact. That actually means we end up running essentially with a walking gait, which means we're kind of landing on a heel on a relatively straight leg. That impact then comes back from the ground, and that can potentially hurt you because that impact isn't dissipated correctly. And it's about 2.5 times your body weight coming back at you when your foot lands on the ground as a runner. But that foot making contact with the ground has the ability to create a load of elastic energy, which throws you forward. So we want to make sure that we have a good contact with the ground. So what I want your listeners to try and think about is that, so when they push off and go into the air during their stride, when their foot lands, we're trying to think about having what I would call a tripod landing. So the foot coming down, so the heel comes down at the same time as the ball of the foot. So the foot is coming down with a full foot landing. So not on the heel and also not on the ball of the foot, not on the forefoot, the whole of the foot coming down together.
And how does that differ from like forefoot striking and those type of things, which we're more used to hearing about?
So with my research and taking, I guess, a very anthropological view of a runner, so going back to how we were designed to move, remember I said when we gave away muscle to the chimpanzees 6 million years ago, we developed a very clever foot and stood tall. So to learn how to get the best from the foot as a runner, we really need to understand the foot. And so if you land the foot with this flat landing or full landing or tripod landing, as I like to call it, what that does is that creates huge amounts of stability. So we use tripods to create stability, don't we? When I coach, I put my iPad on a tripod. So landing with this full foot gives you a very stable landing. Also, on the bottom of your foot, you've got 250,000 nerve endings. You've got more nerves in your feet than you have your hand. And that foot landing, those 250,000 nerve endings are going to send loads of really exciting information up into your body, telling you how hard you hit the ground, what the ground felt like. It gives you your spatial awareness. And it also gives you your perceived rate of exertion, how hard you're pushing off, how hard you're trying. So you need to absolutely maximize those nerve endings making contact with the ground. If you land on your heel or if you land on your forefoot, you're really not using as many of those nerve endings as you should. That full foot landing means that all of the nerve endings work and send really exciting information up into the body. Also, your foot is actually the arch of the foot and the way the foot is shaped means that the foot is essentially a half dome. It's shaped like a half dome. If you land the foot correctly with that half dome, that means the dome dissipates that impact out when you hit the ground. If you land on your heel or if you land on your forefoot, you don't dissipate that impact out. You don't spread it. It just comes back to potentially hurt you and definitely slow you down. And we also have this beautiful piece of elastic on the bottom of the foot called the plantar fascia. Many people will have heard of plantar fasciitis and will be like wincing now. But actually, the plantar fascia is a beautiful thing. It's a great big piece of elastic on the bottom of the foot. If you land that foot with a full foot landing, that creates a load of spring in the foot as well. If you land on the heel or the ball of the foot, you don't really get that. So landing that full foot gives you lots of stability, lots of information from the foot and lots of elasticity, and it spreads the impact. So that's why we would want to go for that landing rather than the heel or the ball of the foot.
Interesting. And then what's the next thing as we work up the body?
So the next thing we want to think about is this running tall thing. Okay, so if I can give you a visualization for this, is just imagine you've got a line running from your, so it starts at your belly button and it goes up through the torso, through the chest, underneath the chin, and up through the face to the top of the head. So you've eventually got a very straight line running from your navel, your belly button, up through the chest to the top of your head. Now, if you imagine when you're running, if you just put a little, what I call a bow in that line. So you just open up that line slightly, just open up the chest area, just to create a little bit of a bow in that line. What that does is that gets you nice and tall, and it also gets gravity onto your side as well, because we kind of want to use gravity to help us move. Gravity is definitely for free. So by getting that center line, thinking about being nice and tall, and then just opening up that bow in that center line, that increases the surface area of your elastic system, and it gets you into a good gravity situation as well. So you're kind of almost falling forward.
That immediately helps you drop your shoulders as well, doesn't it? That often up around our ears in modern day world.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very apt actually, because this sea of tension that we run around in is only ever created in our everyday movement. And of course, for many of us now, that everyday movement is being stuck in front of a screen in a very peculiar position. So these 206 bones that are floating around in this sea of elasticity, that sea of elasticity is actually created when you're sat down for 9 hours a day or whatever, if that's what you're doing, definitely. So the shoulders actually come into the next thing that I would talk about, and that's your arm movement. Okay. Your arms are incredibly important when you run. They're so dominant over your legs. They really are. Your very clever arms, hands and arms, tell your legs what to do to a large degree. So when you're running, we're thinking about landing on that tripod landing. We're thinking about having that beautiful center line with the bow in it. Then with our arms, you're thinking about a dynamic movement to the rear with your arms. So your elbows are doing the work and they are driving backwards. Okay, so we don't really have the arms come out in front of us. Everything is to the rear with the arms. And that actually helps to put you in that bow type position. So beautifully relaxed shoulders and the elbows driving back. And then I would finish with the head, that head with the eye line on the horizon, dropping the eye line every now and again, of course, to see what's coming up, because you don't want to fall over. If the head is up, you're going to see whatever you're going to fall over long before you get to it. And you'll kind of track it and see it as it comes. And that way, the head is the last link in that elastic chain, because those lines of elasticity go up into the skull. It also makes the head very light. And actually, as well, for your runners, your inner ear, your vestibular area, the inner ear, that's where a lot of your balance and spatial awareness comes from. Well, that all works better if the head is up with the eye line on the horizon, because that's how a human was designed to be. We were designed to be looking around for food and not being food. So if we're running around with our head down, it actually creates an imbalance in our body from the point of view of understanding where we are and how balanced we feel.
Oh, do you know what? I've run a couple of marathons and I'm very fortunate. I have had a bit of coaching, and I do remember at certain times during the marathons when it got really tough, and I checked in with myself and how I was running, and I was definitely creeping into that kind of like hunched over, almost like head veering towards the floor, and then managed to pull it back and really focus on my form and how much not easier it felt, because I feel like nothing's easy after mile 21 on a marathon, but just how much I wasn't hating my life so much. Have you done any, in your research, have you got any stats about how much form plays into how much more of an efficient runner you are? Or
Well, I mean, yeah, and everybody asks that. And as soon as you start to coach somebody, or if somebody rings me and says, hey, you know, I want some coaching, I'm doing a marathon time at this at the moment, you know, what will coaching take me? How much will I improve? It's how long is a piece of string? You know, different people, depending on where you're coming from and going to, you know, it makes a big difference. But what I can absolutely tell you that from a performance point of view is that if you move well, you're basically telling your body it doesn't need as much oxygen, because gravity and elasticity are for free from an oxygen point of view. You don't need so much oxygen in anyway, and actually moving better with more spring and a better foot contact and the foot leaving better actually creates more speed, because it allows you to have a longer stride. So there's no particular stat you could say, well, if you do this, you'll be sort of 15-20% more efficient. But when I'm working with runners, it's incredible how their horizons change as they start to move better, because the toll on the body is a lot less. Yeah, the performance can just go on and on. And I work with lots of different runners, but I'm working with a runner at the moment called Damien Hall. And Damien is about 45 years old, I think, and he just gets faster and stronger every year. He's just done the FKT, the fastest known time for the Pennine Way. And yeah, he just, you know, every year he gets a year older, but he gets a year stronger and a year quicker as well. So, and because the body's constantly re-architecting and rejuvenating itself, you know, it really doesn't matter what our age is. You know, running really isn't just a young person's game at all. And so we can get quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker and more efficient as we get better at the skill. Because that's what running is a movement skill. It's a sequence of beautiful movements that propels your body.
It's interesting that I feel like only now is that conversation opening up for the everyday runner, because it's existed in the past couple of years in the, you know, the strength training world, as women have learned more about the benefits of strength training, but like know about doing quality over quantity. And it's there, it's evident in the yoga world, where we definitely talk about being in the right posture as opposed to forcing your body into places. But I think within the running world, it's always been quite basic in like the mass consumer kind of information market. And it's all just literally been about getting faster or nailing a marathon. But actually this piece in the middle about how you actually do that seems to have got lost or just not spoken about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. Everything has just been for the elite runners. And it was only really elite runners that would think, right, okay, how do I move? How do I make those kind of marginal gains? But it doesn't matter who I'm working, whether it's a complete first time runner or a world record holder. You know, I look at running as a movement skill, and I would treat it the same as yoga, as martial arts, as ballet, as a movement skill. And one that you can practice and get better and better and better at. And you know, what's fascinating about my work is that every one of your listeners that's listening, their movement is like their fingerprint. It's different to anybody else's on the planet. It comes with its own idiosyncrasies and its own contraindications. We all move slightly different from each other. But just because you're not trying to break a world record or put a great vest on or represent your country, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't get as excited about your movement as they do. And I think that's really, really exciting for everybody. The body's changing at a massive rate of knots constantly. Even if you just want to run for fun, and that's actually the best reason to run, I think, actually, is that you go out and you treat it like a skill. Yes, you're getting fit. You know, it's good for the skin, it's good for the health, good for the mental health, but you're also learning a skill as well. Like you mentioned yoga, if you go to a yoga class, you want to come out of that yoga class, I think, slightly better than when you went in. You've practiced that skill. You feel as though you're making progress with it. Why wouldn't we look at running in the same way? And that's what I'm working really, really hard to do, is to get people thinking of it in that way. And it's working, I think.
It definitely is. And so I've got a question related to individual fingerprints. Should we be trying to work with our own individual fingerprint? Or say, if we run like Phoebe from Friends, or we have a knee that rolls in, is it a case of that we're trying to override our current movement to create a better movement? Or is it a case of that we work with our current movement and we don't try and make it into this one uniform movement?
So, no, it's a good question. And so I would say that there is a way that we should run, that we should all aspire to run from the point of view of how we land our foot, what we do with our arms, the posture that we would get, the head position. You know, there is a good way for a human to run, but we are all incredibly different. So I think to answer your question, we are all working with what we've got, and we then will then aspire to move in the best way that we possibly can. So if someone has a knee that turns in, or, you know, a joint that doesn't work quite well, or any kind of contraindication in the body that makes them think, well, I can't run like an African, so there is no point. Absolutely not. It is taking your movement and treating it like a skill and trying to get it moving as best you can, you know, to the way a kind of a human is designed to move. But we get as close to that as we can. Not everybody in a yoga class is of the same ability, are they? Some people are doing some extraordinary things, and some people aren't anywhere near that. But, you know, the person at the front of the class is doing extraordinary things, may have been doing it for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Mm-hmm. The person at the back of the class, maybe their second lesson. And that running is the same. If you start to think about your movement, your horizons will broaden incredibly, because what's not possible today very quickly becomes possible. You know, you've just got to adapt your body to it. And that means just little and often, you know, in a very relaxed way. Running should be about thinking about it and enjoying it as a skill. So really, to answer the question, we go with what we've got and we try and make the most beautiful movement from that and take a fascination in that.
I love that. One of the areas, Shane, that I know does cause a bit of tension / sticky points within running for you is treadmill running. And I know that you've said it's because it produces an unnatural running environment, and then we're all running in these unnatural running environments, and it's why you take all of your training outside. But we do live in a world right now where treadmill running is a big thing. There's treadmill classes, or there were treadmill classes popping up all over the place before COVID. And many women do like to use a treadmill either in a gym session, or they use it to train on because it helps them feel safe. Is there any way of using a treadmill within your training plan in a way that it doesn't create an unnatural movement for the body? Or is it just a case of that they do create these unnatural environments and it is just going to affect how you run?
Sure. So the first thing I would say is there is no bad running. You know, running on a treadmill is not a bad thing at all. You know, all running is good, and I think we should all run. And if a treadmill is your way of running, then absolutely do it. You know, on dark nights and things like that, it's, you know, sometimes it's better to be on a treadmill. So the reason I don't analyze movement or coach on a treadmill is because you do move differently on a treadmill than you do on terra firma, on the ground. But that doesn't mean to say that you can't do your training and some of your running on a treadmill at all. Absolutely. You know, you can do that. I think there's nothing better than getting outside and breathing the fresh air. And I think that's why most of us love running. But if it's the difference between running and not running, then you should definitely run on a treadmill, without a doubt. And I think when you're on that treadmill, what you should be thinking about are the fundamentals that we kind of looked at with that foot landing and with that elegant pose, with your center line, using the arms with a dynamic movement to the rear, and that head in that good position. So if you try and stick to those fundamentals while you're running on the treadmill, that can only be good. People shouldn't be nervous about running on treadmills if that's what their lifestyle dictates. But think about those same fundamentals as you would if you were running outside.
Do you know what? I definitely used the treadmill in my last training cycle when I was doing a race. And I was the person that went on the treadmill in front of the mirror, not because
in front of a mirror, aren't they?
I always went for the one with the best
spot in front of the mirror, and not because I liked looking at myself or doing Instagram videos, although there was a lot of those, but just because when I did find out about the posture cues, I found that being in front of the mirror and seeing myself on the treadmill actually quite useful, because I would notice when my shoulders rolled forwards rather than being back. I would notice like my arms when they were swinging too far across my body, where when you're running outside or you're doing speed work outside by yourself, which is the reality for a lot of us, you don't have that feedback.
No, you are right. You're, for good or bad, you can constantly or very often see yourself. And that can be helpful. And without a doubt, you know, that's why I was saying earlier on, you know, if you buddy up with someone and you video each other, it's very enlightening as to what you're doing. So, yeah, so it can be good to kind of see yourself, because outside it's shop windows and shadows, really, isn't it? That's the only way you've got to kind of see what you're doing. So, yeah, that can be helpful.
You've just got to get over seeing yourself for a good 30 minutes.
Some people love it, but for some people it's a trauma.
Can we quickly move on to the rise of barefoot running and what are your thoughts on it? Because there seems to be this big barefoot running community versus the rest of the world who are all buying trainers for overpronation, underpronation, or anything under the sun. And I'd love to know where you sit within that conversation and what you feel is good for movement patterns.
Yeah. Okay. So remember, we went back to the 6 million years ago when, you know, we kind of stood up tall and developed this very clever foot. That was our USP. That's what meant we populated the world. So I think for runners, you think of your foot as the interface between you and the ground. So when your foot lands, it's got some really, really big tasks to sort out for you. And we kind of talked about them earlier. Stability, proprioception from that quarter of a million nerves, elasticity from the plantar fascia, and dissipating that impact with that dome effect. Your foot is absolutely beautifully designed to do all of those things. There's no way, I don't think anybody can make something out of rubber, really, that can second guess the foot. Okay. Mm-hmm. I really don't think it can. So I think what we need from a pair of trainers is something that we can put on that will allow the foot to do its ingenious work, but protect the foot from the environment, but at the same time, help the foot relate to its environment. Okay. So if you were running on trail, you'd want a pair of trainers that were grippy in mud or grippy on rock. If you were running on track, you'd want trainers that allowed you to interact with the track well. If it was road, then to interact with the road. So the trainers shouldn't try and give you any bounce because your foot has loads of that. The trainers shouldn't try and create any cushioning because your foot's very good at that by dissipating the impact. And remember, impact turns into elastic energy, which throws you forward. So we wouldn't really, I think, want to interfere with the ingenious foot. We just want to allow it to be protected from the environment so that stones don't hurt our feet, and allow us to move through that environment, whether it's mud, etc. So really, I don't think we should be running around in super minimalist footwear, because we didn't grow up like that. Obviously, you know, I go and live with lots of tribes and indigenous people as part of my work in jungles and in mountains and all over the world. And many of them will be in bare feet, but actually they've grown up in bare feet. You know, we didn't. So we do need some footwear. Okay. So I think the next time you go out to buy a pair of trainers, you want to buy a pair of trainers that I guess what we would call neutral, in as much as they will allow the foot to do its work. You want a very wide toe cap on the trainer, because when your foot lands, it wants to spread out by about 15%. So a wide toe cap, enough rubber underneath the foot to protect the foot from getting bruised and, you know, and stones and stuff. But at the same time, not so much rubber that we can't feel the ground. So yeah, I think really barefoot running, I'm not sure what that is. I think whether it's a style of running or whether it's a status of your footwear, you know, I think you can run beautifully in a pair of wellies or really badly in a pair of 250-pound trainers. I don't think we should be governed by the footwear to tell them how to run. So learn to use that ingenious foot well, and then protect it from the environment and allow it to interact with its environment with the trainers. So most people don't overpronate or supinate. You know, most people will move neutrally if they actually land on a tripod landing. If you land on a heel, which is what you would call a loose adapter, so the foot rocks and rolls, that's often when we have a lot of problems. So what we should be doing is making sure we land the foot well rather than trying to buy a pair of trainers that will get us to do it, because they can't. It's impossible.
Makes so much sense. Oh, I can't believe we're running out of time. Shane, it's been amazing talking to you. Can I ask you to leave the listeners with one thing or piece of advice that they could all be doing to move better this autumn?
Okay. And I think really almost where we started, get height in that body, stand tall with a feeling with a nice lengthened spine, and get that head up on top of the body. You'd certainly do that when you're running and actually in your everyday life. See if you can get a standing desk. See if you can actually spend some of your day standing, because that's actually probably the biggest investment you can make into your dynamic movement, is getting your everyday movement more beautiful.
I'm feeling pretty chuffed with myself, because I did at the start of lockdown get myself an at-home standing desk.
Amazing. Brilliant.
I feel like I've done a tick. Shane, thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your years of experience and research with us. It's honestly fascinating, and it's so nice to hear about how we can all improve our running without pushing ourselves harder, because I think that has been the conversation for so many years, or at least the one which I've listened into.
Yeah.
So to listen into ourselves a bit more to improve what we're doing just feels so much kinder.
Yeah, less is definitely more.
So Shane, where else can they catch up with you and potentially get in touch to book some coaching or just to find out more?
So I have a website, so it's Running Reborn. So I do one-to-one coaching, I do groups, but I also do a huge amount of online coaching as well. And I literally coach runners on 6 continents where they send me video of themselves running. And I kind of critique that, load it down onto software, and then have sort of Zoom or Skype sessions, which seems to be the way of the world now, discuss that person's movement and slow it down and have a really good look at it. So yeah, I do that with people all over the world. So there's 3 different ways there. And yeah, of course, the book that will talk about the journey and all of the things we're talking about, foot landing and arm swing and head position and posture and fascia, they're all in there as well with some thoughts behind it. So yeah, there's a number of ways. So, but if anybody's just got any questions, you know, more than happy to answer those questions. If they just want to shoot me an email from the website, no problem at all.
Amazing. So guys, if you're feeling a bit bummed out because your race has been cancelled or postponed, why not use this time now to really focus on your form and swat up on all the things that you can be doing to make it feel a bit easier and nicer. And if you do put Shane's tips into practice this week, do tag us both on Instagram and use the hashtag WellFar. I would love to see. Thanks everyone, and thanks Shane.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I hope you found some of this advice helpful. And remember, if you do like the podcast, then please rate, review and subscribe. It really helps other runners find us. Plus, you can also keep up to date with other runners in our virtual crew by using the hashtag WellFar on Instagram and by joining the new WellFar Club on Strava. I look at all your posts and updates, and it absolutely makes my day.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.